next guest, Terry Small. You're very welcome.
It's great to be here, John.
And as a Canadian, are you taking a very keen interest in the Olympics?
Well, we're taking a very keen interest. We've been roaming around Ireland for the last week, so we haven't been able to see as much as we like, but Canada's a great sporting country, and it's been great so far.
And how has Canada been doing? Has it been winning any
medals? Well, we're very excited with our four bronze medals, and we expect to be moving up the table very quickly.
Yes, right. Okay, and you were watching the swimming last night.
We were watching the swimming last night, yes. Yeah. Very exciting.
And you have a model of a brain there in front of you, which is a bit a giveaway, because I suppose the brain specialist is not the right expression. You're a learning skills specialist. You have devoted a lot of your career to helping us improve how we think and how we use our brains.
That's correct.
And you're here to give a bit of a masterclass this morning in how we could do all better. So where did this all begin, Terry? And at this stage, what's your view of how we can improve the way we think and the way we perform? And even I'm just thinking of Olympic athletes and them clearing their brains to ensure that they have a better performance.
Well, a really good point. I mean, your brain is involved in everything you do, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And even when you sleep, which is why if somebody comes in, John, and flips on the light, you'll wake up. And I'm actually pretty shocked in any audience I speak to if anybody's ever read a book about the brain cover to cover. 90% of what we know about the brain's been learned in the last 2 years. So I'd be surprised if any Olympic athletic program in any nation didn't include a brain component. Not just in terms of getting the right pictures in the brain, but how to look after your brain, how to feed your brain properly. Incredibly important. There's a strong, strong body-brain connection. So I guess my first gentle suggestion to the listeners would be, if you've never read a book about your brain, make this year that you do that. It will just enrich your life with you. You can't even imagine.
Just by reading about what you can do with it, in other words.
Reading about the brain, I send out a brain bulletin of the most interesting thing I've read about the brain each month, and I get lots and lots of responses back to it. I'm here in Ireland. I met the voice coach, Paul Mussolidis. We're speaking to leaders tomorrow about the brain. What do leaders need to know about the brain to get a following? So many leaders get it wrong. We get it wrong as parents, as teachers, leading organizations. We've seen leadership challenges in Canada, in Ireland, certainly across Europe, in Syria right now. So
you're just saying
fascinating topic.
So you're saying a lot of leaders just don't use their brains, essentially.
Well, I think people use their brains, but if you don't understand how your brain works, then a lot of stuff can go bad. One of the things I'll be doing in my talk tomorrow with Paul is asking people in the session, why do magic tricks and optical illusions work? And people say, well, because, you know, we're not really paying attention, which is true. Most people's attention density is disastrous on a good day. The reason magic tricks and optical illusions work is because your brain is wired to see what is essential, not what is real. Never assume that what you're looking at is real. Your brain sees what is essential. So ultimately, as an illusionist, if I can create something essential in your brain that becomes important in that moment, I can literally make things invisible to you in that moment. And then when the effect happens, the brain goes, it's magic. Yeah. Well, there's no magic. Part of it is just you're a disaster at paying attention to start with. But also,
and they are playing on that. The
illusionist is playing on that. Paul and I are going to talk tomorrow to these leaders about learning and why it's really the competitive advantage. Organizations that can learn faster will have an advantage. And the best definition of learning I think you will ever hear in your life is learning is connecting new information to what you already know. That's what your brain does. Your brain is primarily wired to keep you alive for survival. So through your five senses plus intuition, your brain is constantly taking information in. Even when you sleep, your brain is on at some level. And so the first thing your brain does when it picks up information, for example, when Alan walks in the room, you glanced up. And your brain is immediately looking for something in your brain to connect the sight of this person. Oh, that's just Alan walking. Connection made. Everything is good. Now, had it been a stranger, it would have been a different connection. So it really, that's how magic tricks work.
So give us a few specific examples of how we can better use our brains. For instance, remembering names. I know you've done a lot of work on the importance of remembering names and how people can improve their ability to remember people's names. Typically, if you're going to a party or if you're in a group and you're introduced to four or five people, actually, you might take the listener through a bit of a routine here that might help them the next time they're in social company and they can't remember people's names.
Well, yeah, first of all, John, great point. It is, in my opinion, the number one skill that a leader, that a person can have. And we're going to talk about this tomorrow. Ultimately, I think most of the listeners would be able to relate. You're at a party. Somebody comes up. I'm John. I'm Terry. You turn away. You shovel some food on your paper plate. You look back and it's like, what was that person's name? And you just heard it. And it's gone. Don't look for it. It wasn't there. And so then people say, well, I forgot your name. You didn't forget it. You never learned it in the first place to forget it. So don't flatter yourself. It just didn't get in your brain to begin with.
Is that because in the first instance there might have been a lack of interest?
Well, not so much a lack of interest, but the number one job of the brain is to keep you alive. Your brain is primarily hardwired for survival. This has been one of the most important discoveries about the brain in the last 400 years. 85% thinking is physical. It physically takes place in your brain. It's a combination of chemical, electrical reactions. And most of them are dedicated to survival. And the part of that means a lot of things. And part of it is you don't want to be embarrassed. So when somebody says their name to you, you don't hear their name, you hear your name. Because you're getting ready with your answer so that when they're finished, you'll be able to say, well, my name is John. Well, that's probably not the best use of your brain power.
Okay.
So I have a rule. We know that if you say something out loud, your brain will remember 400% better. So even something as simple as a student studying vocabulary at the kitchen table for homework, if they do it out loud, it's got to be out of the mouth, back through the auditory pathways to the brain, 400% increase. So my rule is when I meet somebody, I'm not allowed to say my name until I've used your name. So if you come up to me and say your name, I won't tell you my name. I will say, well, John, it's nice to meet you. My name is Terry. Very natural sounding, but what I've done is it forces my brain to pay attention. That'll make your listeners 10 times better. But then by saying it out loud back to you, that's a 400% increase.
In the likelihood that you'll remember it.
Well, because I that's just the rule now. I don't get to introduce my name until I've used your name back to you. So that really forces me to pay attention. Mm. And that's half the battle. Then the other part of it is learning is connecting new information to what you already know. So the problem is most people's names don't mean anything. John doesn't mean anything. It's kind of abstract. But I have another John in my head. I have a good friend, John. So if I mindfully connect you to my friend John, who likes to play tennis on the tennis court, I now have linked you two in a picture in my brain, and your brain thinks in pictures, not words. So 15 minutes later, if you can't remember my name, you've got nowhere to go. You're done. And so if you're a leader, I mean, that's a disaster. I mean, it's because the number one job, it always comes back to that, is to keep people alive. So that means your name is the sweetest sound to you in any language, really. I mean, people like to feel on some level that they're important. So by linking up a picture in my brain, I will probably forget your name 15 minutes later, but I can access the picture. Oh, the tennis, oh, the, yeah, that's my friend John. This guy's name must be John. I mean, it's not foolproof. Mm. But my challenge to the listeners would be walk into a room and quickly learn 10 names. They will be astounded. Pay attention. Say your name first. Then a little pleasant conversation, make a picture, link it into your brain, and then just be astounded. And then watch the delight on the other person's face when 15 minutes later, when there was no reason for you to remember their name, you've got it just like that.
So a bit of extra effort, in other words, is what you're saying.
I would say a bit more mindfulness. I think, to be honest with you, you have to work harder to get what you don't want than you do to get what you do want.
Sorry to interrupt you. A lot of people say, well, sure, it doesn't matter because you might meet them again. You're saying it's very important for leaders, for the people they are meeting to feel that they mean something.
First of all, it's good for your brain. I mean, 50% of the population in North America, and Ireland will be no different, is projected to have Alzheimer's at age 80. If you make it to age 80, there's a 50-50 chance you'll have Alzheimer's. And that is a shocking statistic. Scientists are increasingly saying that doesn't have to happen. And so one of the things Paul and I are going to talk about tomorrow in this session is how important it is for leaders to have good brains. But obviously, it's important for everybody to have a good brain. So for you to get off of autopilot and actually decide, okay, I'm going to put some effort into learning people's names, the first benefit is you will end up with a more connected, complex brain. which means your thinking will be faster, you're less likely to get Alzheimer's, and on it goes. Mm. The benefit beyond that, of course, is you become a more authentic person. You become a more likable person. And you have to do it for the right reasons. I mean, Irish people, they've got – we've been here twice now, and Irish people have a very good BS detectors. I mean, you're either authentic or you're not, and it yes. seems to me Irish people get that very fast. So you've got to start from
if you're trying to pretend you're not something you're not, they'll see through it.
You've got to start from a place that people are important.
Can I move you
so
on?
So your name's important.
Sure. Can I move you on to brain food?
Ah,
breakfast.
Breakfast.
We
is
had
a brain
man
meal.
In. We had yes. a man in here on Monday, Walter Bortz, and he is famous for saying that we all should be living to the age of 100 and beyond. And I was asking him about his nutrition and what he ate early in the morning. He doesn't eat anything. He doesn't eat anything until midday. You differ on that score.
Yes, breakfast is your brain meal. You should never skip breakfast. You get breakfast wrong, and your brain will pay a price all day long. Just in short term performance, long term. It's not great for aging as well. I mean, your brain, breakfast is made up of two words. It's a compound word. What's the root word of breakfast? The question to you.
The root word.
What is the root word of breakfast?
Fast.
It is.
Yes.
It's fast. And of course, that means while you were sleeping, you were dreaming, you were myelinizing memories, maybe you had a nightmare tossed in there to keep things interesting. So you're breaking the fast. Your brain is seriously depleted of its source of fuel. Which most people don't know. I mean, could there be a more basic question on the planet than what does your brain burn for fuel? Well, it's glucose. So you wouldn't get the wrong fuel in your car. You wouldn't want to put the wrong fuel in your brain. So
yes.
it's important.
It's
your
not
brain
any old breakfast,
glucose.
Terry, is it? Because you're
but
talking...
But I have, I think, devised what I believe is the number one breakfast on the planet.
A good
quantity of plain yogurt that becomes a great, healthy platform for your breakfast. Stir in a little bit of maybe a teaspoon of pure vanilla or half a teaspoon of pure vanilla extract. That raises serotonin levels in the brain. It's the feel-good chemicals. I think you had a guest here a few weeks ago who talked about how smiling is important for the brain. Same thing. When you smile, you release serotonin. Vanilla does the same thing. So we got yogurt. We put a little bit of vanilla. And then blueberries, also known as brain berries. It's actually, in my part of Canada, the number one agricultural crop, all being driven around brain research. So you stir the blueberries in. They can be frozen as long as you didn't add sugar. Just thaw them out. So now we've got yogurt. We've got a little bit of vanilla in. We stir in the blueberries. Crumble walnuts on top, the number one brain energy food on the planet. And then sprinkle a little bit of cinnamon. That will balance out your blood sugar during the day so you don't go through those troughs. Maybe you don't have the luxury of having a nap and you've got to push through a day of work. Those five ingredients. I would challenge your listeners to try this experiment. Have a really poor breakfast for 3 days.
Right.
Bad brain breakfast would be maybe just a single cup of coffee and a white scone with jam.
Okay.
Or do what the teenagers do. Have a chocolate bar and a can of cola. Or a donut and a can of cola.
An average breakfast like a cereal?
Try a cereal. I would rate that a little bit above terrible, but not too much.
Yeah, but there should be an improvement. What I'm saying is you
have a poor breakfast for 3 days in a row, then try the breakfast that I've just outlined. And if the listeners are driving and they can't write it down, they'll see it in my Brain Bulletin archive. Where you found it.
Sure.
And then try the brain breakfast for 3 mornings. They will be astounded at the difference in improvement in their brain in real time that day. The long-term benefit, of course, over your life and much less likely to have your brain fall apart as you get older.
So you just know it's going to work by eating.
Oh,
this.
I guarantee you it will work. I have 25,000 people on my brain bulletin list. They've tried it. I get lots of emails back.
People try it and it succeeds.
It's a very big deal.
Terry, we always hear that change is good for us, but why do our brains resist change so much?
As I said, learning is connecting new information to what you already know. And so your brain is wired to see what is essential, not what is real. Your brain decides what is essential by checking the pictures that you have in your brain. Which is why two people can hear the same thing and come to different conclusions. So that twinned with the fact that the number one job of the brain is to keep you alive. Your brain has a bias for stasis. So we have our comfortable chairs and we have our favorite place to sit. You go to church, you sit in the same pew every Sunday. And so without mindfulness on your part, your brain will default to its level of comfort. People walk into a building, some will always turn left, some will always turn right. Why it is so important, John, is that for people that are our age, it's easy to rely on connections that you've already built in your brain. Everything you have learned and experienced in your life is physically stored in your brain through synaptic connections. If you ever wonder why an Alzheimer's person can forget who they are, it's because your memories are physically in those connections. When the connections go, the memories go. So by changing, by maybe using a left-handed mouse on your computer for a month, brushing your hand with another teeth, maybe living completely out of the box and trying a different pub in a different part of town.
This is good for us.
This is good for you.
Yeah.
This is good for you because change, real change, will force new connections to grow between your brain cells.
So trying to write with the left hand, doing something, if you're right-handed.
Absolutely.
Give us a few more examples of how we can exercise our brains.
You can brush your teeth with your other hand. You walk into a room. You walk into church. You walk into a pub.
Do you break your routine, for instance? Would you break
routine? Let me ask you. You walk into a room. There are 30 people, three friends and 27 strangers. Who do you want to talk to?
The people you know.
The people you know. Why? Because it's
comfortable.
And the number one job of the brain is to keep you alive and comfortable. So you hear the same thing, same old story, same complaints. You didn't learn anything. It's actually hard work to go and talk to somebody new. But in actual fact, suddenly now your brain is on high alert. Like, what did that expression mean? Does this person look bored? He just looked down at his watch. What does that mean? You have to pay attention. You have nothing in common. During that, in real time, your brain is growing connections between the brain cells. There's a term for this. It's called neuroplasticity. If your listeners were to Google neuroplasticity, all one word, they will find an enormous amount of interesting information. I have some on my website.
What is the website, Terry?
My website is terrysmall.com. And we are speaking tomorrow.
I think it's nearly sold out at this stage. It's called Brain Boosting Secrets and Vocal Intelligence, as you say yourself, and Paul Mussolidis. That's in the Morgan Hotel tomorrow morning at...
Yeah, we've got three or four tickets left. It's a 9 o'clock start.
Tickets are 45.
People need to go online, though. I think Paul's set up a voicematters.com.
Voicecoach.ie is the website, I think.
But yeah. I think the registration will be at his other website, voicematters.com.
A word on porridge before you go. A lot of people are texting us to say, is porridge not the ultimate food for helping one's brain in the morning?
Boy, porridge is that. I grew up. I have an Irish background. My mother was born in Derry, and so I grew up on porridge. I would add to that, if your listeners want to take it to a higher level of brain food, you could stir in some fresh blueberries, crumble some walnuts on top, sprinkle a little bit of cinnamon on top, stir in vanilla, and you've got the brain breakfast. You just change the platform.
Terry, thank you. And a lot of people asking us about your recipe because they didn't have time to take it down. And we'll put the recipe up on
online and then just direct them. And they can sign up for the Brain Bulletin if they want on the website. And Paul's got a great newsletter on his at voicematters.com. And it has been an absolute pleasure to be in Ireland.
And Terry, I'm looking forward to next going into social company and trying to work out the names of the 27 strangers that we come across.
Fantastic.
Thanks a million for coming in this morning and enjoy the rest of your stay here.